Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
Thank you. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. Thank you for podcasting. Thank you for downloading the show. Thank you for asking for links to be on your website of this show. I mean, all of that's totally, totally appreciated. And you don't know how much of that it makes me feel as if you really want me here. That's great. That's wonderful. I know I won't be able to please everybody. I don't try to please everybody, because everybody cannot be pleased. So you just got to go and do what you can and do it the best way that you can. And like I said before, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It is beautiful. It's wonderful outside. Summer's dying down, but you can't hardly tell it, at least in the city of Chicago. I mean, they're talking about 80s and 90s tomorrow. It feels like 80s and 90s right now. And we got a couple more weeks of summer, at least officially by the calendar. We have a couple more weeks of summer. And hopefully they're going to be some pretty good days. I'm hearing that September, maybe even October, may be mild. And even we may even have a mild winter. But I'm hearing from all sides, we're going to have a mild winter. We're going to have a damn really cold winter, you know. So it's coming from all sides. But I kind of, since the summer has been so awesome, I'm thinking we just may have a mild winter, but that remains to be seen. Anyway, we've been off the air for about 3 days. I got some writing done, some editing done, and I've gone over some of my ebooks and short stories to try to get them up to par, because some of them are not up to par. And you know, there's more stuff coming out in a couple more months. So I want to make sure that the material that I have on Amazon right now is up to par and readable. And, you know, so when you download that stuff, you read it, and you find there that they are really good stories. Some of them are really good stories. I got novels, essays, and short stories. I'm a short story buff. I mean, I've become a short story buff. I like short stories. You know, 30 to 50 or 60 pages, I think that's enough to tell a story. I don't think you really need 300 or 400 pages to tell a story, a good story. And I believe that. And it is true. I mean, you got some of the greatest writers in the world who are now on the short story banner. You know, they're writing short stories too. And they're great. They're wonderful. I mean, I can write 4, 5, 6, or 7 short stories in the span of a year, where it would take me 3 years to write a 300 to 400 page novel. And you tell yourself, why would you want to do a 400 page to 300 page novel for it not to sell? You know, why don't you do a short story, be short and sweet? But a lot of people have complaints about short stories. They complain. It's obvious. The complaints are obvious when you do a short story. Someone reads one of your short stories and they love it. They like it. They think it's great. But they have one complaint. And that complaint that they have on that short story is that it's just too short. You know, I mean, if you're going to write short stories, make sure you put it out there on the front cover that it's a short story. So people will not be so disappointed when they read it, because they know it's a short story. And a lot of people complaints about a short story is that the short story leave them hanging. Is not enough in there, you know, but that's a short story. You know, when I do my short stories, you know, yes, some of the stories will leave you hanging. Then some of the stories will have you think for yourself what might go on in that short story if it had continued with lots of more pages. You use your imagination when you're reading one of my short stories. You can imagine, you know, use your imagination on the stories, the characters in the story, the premise of the story once the story is over. But I've also heard, you know, I've gotten great accolations for my short stories. I mean, some people said, George, you're great. Then some people said, George, there's a mistake right there on page 2. You know, so, but it's all in fun, folks. It's fun. I love writing. I love doing it. I'm going to have to cut back on it because I've got too much stuff up there on Amazon. It's like, you know, really, really crowded, but I love writing. And I hope, and I think writing is something that everybody should do. You know, I mean, I think it's, as I've told many guests on this show, I think writing is therapeutic. You know, it will save your soul. You know, it's like it's exercising your brain. You know, that's what you're doing. And we talked about Alzheimer's on this show about a few days ago. And one of the ways to stave off Alzheimer's dementia is to read, write. Play games, you know, exercise your brain, you know. So that's another story. That's another topic for another time. We're going to talk about Hillary Clinton's and her illness. This is really, really something. There are people out here who are saying that the Democrats should pick someone else to run in her place. There's already calls out here to get Bernie Sanders to get back into the race. Okay? Because pneumonia is nothing to play with. And this is giving Donald Trump supporters, you know, fuel. They are energized. She's sick. She can't do it. But you know what? I don't blame her for being sick. I blame her for not being transparent, not telling us about this. She knew that she was sick before she even visited that 911 memorial yesterday. She knew that she was sick then, but she didn't tell us. She didn't tell anybody. She went to that memorial, 9/11 memorial, knowing that she wasn't feeling well. And then she had to leave early and stumbled and collapsed into the hands of her Secret Service people. This is just giving Donald Trump an edge over her. And I do think, I'm not a Donald Trump fan, but I do think this guy's going to take it. You know, I mean, this is one of those times where Hillary Clinton's trustworthy comes into play. Is she lying? Is she hiding something? She was hiding her health. Donald Trump, a few weeks ago, questions her health. And she said, you know, she made us all feel that she was 100% healthy. Apparently not. However, after this stumble and collapse, she went to the doctor, and they're saying that she was diagnosed with a pneumonia, which is nothing to play with. People have died from pneumonia. And all of a sudden now she feels great. She feels wonderful. But the doctor says she needs rest. She needs rest. And I can understand that, because Hillary Clinton is out there every day, all the time. And before this even happened, I'm saying to myself, she's out there and she's doing this. She's campaigning. She's talking. She's going to blah, blah. And she's doing this every day, as you know, for about almost 2 years. And I'm saying to myself, this woman's tired. She's very tired at her age, 68, 69. She's very tired. She needs rest. But she didn't want you to think that she was tired. She didn't want you to think that there was something medically wrong with her, when she swore to be transparent and honest with the public, the voters, which she was not. She was not honest. I'm not making fun of her sickness. I want her to get well. I want her to do well. But this is just one of those things where she was not truthful once more, and her trustworthiness comes into play. And as I've said before, I'm pretty sure they're thinking about, you know, maybe replacing her. They better do something if they're going to replace her. People are thinking about putting Bernie Sanders back in there, because you know what, if Bernie Sanders was doing this instead of Hillary Clinton, he would be far ahead of Donald Trump. Donald Trump could not touch Bernie Sanders the way he's bashing and yelling and screaming about Hillary Clinton. However, Donald Trump wishes Hillary Clinton a speedy recovery. I mean, what else could he say? You know, what else could he say? He's saying he gets no satisfaction out of this. I mean, what else can he say? Right? What else can he say? You know, and Hillary is, I don't know, this may even impact the Congress, because I'm hearing right now that the Democrats are about to blow the Senate. They are. They're about to blow it. You know, so a few weeks ago, they were saying, well, the Democrats could take over the Senate and Congress. Obviously, they can't do it. They can't take over the House of Representatives. There's too many Republicans there. But they did have a chance for the Senate. Now they don't even have a chance for the Senate. If they do have a chance, it's a small chance, and it's waning. So the Democrats are in total disarray right now, and they don't know what to do. They want to replace Clinton, Hillary Clinton. However, you know, it's going to be a job to do. I think they should replace her. This is just my problem. I think they should replace her. I think the replacement should be Bernie Sanders. There's no doubt about it. And he'll come in there and he'll mop the floor with Trump. I want you guys to understand out there, I'm not a Democrat, nor am I a Republican. I am independent, looking at this from both sides. Okay? So don't put me in a category of any kind with these clowns, you know. No way. But I'm just looking from it from a different kind of a perspective. All right. They're saying that the Democrats could lose. All right. State by state, the 2016 Senate consists of 54 Republicans and 42 Democrats. You got, because you have two senators from each state. So you got 50 states. That's 100 senators in the Senate, in Congress. All right. So 2016 Senate consists of 54 Republicans and 42 Democrats, and two independent senators caucused with the Democrats. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. When you're a Democrat, majority of the time you're leaning towards, when you're an independent, you're leaning toward the Democrats. You're leaning toward progressiveness. Voters usually reelect their incumbent senators, but some seats could flip to the other party. In this case, are the Republicans. If four Republican Senate seats flip to Democrats and there are no other changes, the 2017 Senate will be split 50-50. All right, Wisconsin, Illinois, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Indiana, New Hampshire, most of these are red states. Nevada, yeah, Chicago, yeah, they're considering Illinois as a red state because we have a Republican governor. But Illinois is not a red state. It's a blue state with a Republican president. So I don't get these graphics, you know, I don't see this. But this is the way things are done in Washington, D.C. If there's a Republican governor in your state, even though it's a Democratic state, they're calling it a red state, which I don't agree with. You know, so, you know, Nevada is blue. California is blue. You know, and they're saying if you have a Republican governor, then you're in a red state. I don't agree with that. Majority of the people in Illinois do not agree with that. This is a blue state. This state does not belong to Bruce Rauner. This state, Chicago, does not belong to Bruce Rauner. The state does not belong to Bruce Rauner. Because Bruce Rauner, if I can talk about Bruce Rauner for a second, this guy has done exactly nothing. He's been in office for 20 months and has done jack for the state of Illinois. The only thing he's done for the state of Illinois is hurt the state of Illinois by, you know, any means necessary. He is not he's a failed governor. He's a totally failed governor. He's done nothing. We still haven't got a budget. Remember, a few months ago, 6-7 months ago, I was talking about Illinois not having a budget. We still don't have one. We're going into two years without a full budget. They passed a half of a budget. That's not in the state constitution. You have to pass a full year budget. So this guy, he's a failed governor, but he's running around the state. He's mostly downstate because he likes it better down there. It's much better than Chicago. He feels as if he's better accepted downstate than he is upstate Chicago. And he's downstate. Most of the time he's downstate bashing and you know, excruciating Chicago. Remember, this guy said something nasty about the schools. He said something nasty about the teachers, you know, and he has done exactly nothing for the city of Chicago. The crime wave, he's done nothing for the state of Illinois. He's done a lot of, he likes photo ops. The guys like to, he likes to take pictures with people who support him, I guess. But he gets an F from the George Wilder Jr. show. He gets an F from a lot of the people who live in this state. The guy gets an F. He's a failed governor. There's no doubt about it. There's nothing that he's done positive for the state of Illinois. He has yet to do his job. Oh, yeah, he signs a lot of things into law with his executive powers, but he has to work with the legislature in Illinois to get some real progress in doing something for the state. His job, from where he sees it, he's going to be buying up politicians. He's going to be trying to buy them into office. Doesn't matter whether it's Democrats or Republicans, anybody who is willing to do what he wants, he's going to try and make sure they get elected, buying the office. That's how he got it in the first place. He bought it. Whether he used his money, his influence, or he wouldn't be governor right now. And he's done exactly nothing for Illinois. However, he wouldn't tell you that. But he's done nothing. We still haven't got a budget, a full budget. So come January, we're back in the same mess that we were in 6 months ago from January 26, 6 or 7 months from January 2017. So we'll be back in the same mess, folks. So this guy has done exactly nothing. And majority of Republican presidents around the country have done something devastating to their state. There's no doubt about it. Sam Brownback. What's this guy name in Wisconsin? Scott Walker. New Jersey, Chris Christie. I mean, some of the these three governors that I just named, they have some of the most dismal approval ratings from the people of their states. The people showing that they do not like this. They will not be reelected. Okay. And the thing about it, the reason why some of these Republican governors get in office, I stated this many times, in office around the country, especially in some of these southern states here. You know, you got Republicans just about in all of these southern states down here, Alabama, Florida, Dallas, you name it, Kansas. And the reason why some of these, reason why some of these Republicans are elected to office is because people don't vote. They don't vote. I think more people vote in the presidential election than they do for senator and representatives. You know, but they have to vote in every election, especially sometimes even more importantly, the Senate races and the races to be a representative. These are more important. These are important too, just as like voting for the president. Because let's say if Hillary Clinton somehow miraculously, and that's a long shot, become president of the United States, you got to give her people to work with. You can't vote her in office and give and let her, and she has a Republican Congress. They are not going to work with her. You got a Republican Congress and you have a Democratic president. That is like, you know, night and day. Nothing is going to get done. If you're going to vote for Hillary Clinton or a Democrat for president of the United States, you have to also vote for a Democratic senator and a Democratic representative. Same thing for Republicans. That's the same thing for Republicans. If a Republican, if Donald Trump is voted into president in November, he will not be able to work with a Democratic Congress. He would have to have a Republican Congress because he's a Republican, and maybe they just might work together. I'm just trying to generalize here, folks. Voting is so important. This is why some of these Republicans get into office. Remember, they are the one percenters. We are the 99 percenters. We're 99%. So when the 99% of us do not vote, that opens the door for the 1%. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, 347-857-1762 on Blog Talk Radio. I understand it's about 75 degrees near the lake. And it's 6:24 straight up Chicago time, p.m. And it is great. I feel great, folks. I've been off for 3-4 days. And 3 days. We are off Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We're back on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And it's always great. And it's always great. It's wonderful. A lot of us parents are saying, wow, school is back in. The kids going back to school. Give us a break, huh? No. My son is, we talked about this the other day. He's 17. And some kids, when they're 17, they want to stay a child because they figure as a child, they're going to get everything. They're going to be spoiled. They're going to get to go here and do this. And some kids, and I do think in some cases, my son still wants, he wants to stay a child, but he can't. And like other kids, they want to stay children because they, you know, they like being a child. But then some teenagers, they want to be adult fast. I mean, they want to be grown, right? But my son wants to stay a child. And even though he wants to get older, but he wants to stay young. He wants to be treated the same way as an adult, as a child. And I tell him, you, it ain't going to work that way. I mean, you're transitioning over from being a child into an adult. You have to start acting like an adult, thinking like an adult, being adult. You got to leave those childish things behind. And I think that's hard for some teenagers to leave those childish things behind and start doing things that adults does do. I'm a writer, right? Wow. Well, anyway, I'm teaching him and showing him. I think the schools, some of these high schools should have some of the responsibility of showing kids who are 17, 16 and 17 years old, even 18, giving them some pointers on transitioning out from being a child into an adult. You know, because that's important. Kids have to know that they can't stay kids all the time. You know, and then like I said before, there's some teenagers who are 15, 16 acting like adults. You know, but they're not adults. They have to be transitioned over. So what I'm doing now, I'm trying to help him to transition over and, you know, telling him how to, you know, go and if he's going to go to college, and I hope he does, that he may have to also find a part-time job as, you know, working. I mean, going to school, going to college, and also working at the same time, because he's going to need the money for this and that things he's going to need, because I want him to be independent. I don't want him to always have to depend on me or someone else, you know, and that's what he needs to do. And that's one of the ways of transitioning over. I'm teaching him and showing him how to fill out job applications. I'm pressuring him on looking for work, even if he doesn't find it, as long as he makes that effort. And that's what that's about, making that effort. I want to see that effort in him. You really have to push him. I really have to push him. And he's doing pretty well. We did some employment applications for him the other night, and he should be returning them. He may not get none of these jobs, but the effort has to be there. He has to learn. And this is one of the ways that I'm transitioning him over from a teenager to an adult, because it's not easy in this world. It's tough. And I talked to one of his teachers the other day, and I said, why don't you just talk to all the students that you know in that school that you're in charge of about how they should start transitioning over from being a teenager to a full-blooded adult. It's not easy for some, and some it is very easy. But still, I think they should, you know, talk to the entire school, the students. I mean, everywhere. Guidance, whatever, advisory, whatever they call this stuff. Talk to the students about becoming adults and their responsibilities as an adult. Because you've been teaching these kids for years, and they were children, teenagers. Now they're going to be adults. Let them know, and I put this on the parents too. I think the parents should also gather their kids together in the living room or wherever, and sit them down and talk to them about transitioning over from a child, from a teenager, a full-fledged adult, because it's a big change. It's a big change even in their biological makeup, their bodies. So I do, and that's one of the things I do for my kid. I try to help them to transition over from being a silly teenager to being a serious adult. I don't know how I got on that subject. I don't know how I got, I just be ranting and raving and, you know, just about anything. All right. My guest today is supposed to be, we don't know, author Stephen D. Rogers. Okay. We're going to find out what he's going to be talking about today on the George Waters Jr. Show, if he should arrive. But however, if he doesn't, the show still must go on. We must still do what we have to do to make this a complete episode. And I want to thank everybody for downloading and purchasing my books and stories and their positive messages about the books, and those who have reviewed, not many, but those who have reviewed the book, given me an honest review of anything that I do on Amazon. Okay, I'm gonna try and expand my writings to more than just Amazon, because I think there's a lot of people out there who need to read the kind of stuff that I write. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We're gonna do a speech by Michael Bloomberg. Michael Bloomberg.
Thank you for that kind introduction. And let me thank all of you for welcoming an outsider here to deliver what an outsider to deliver what will be an
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, the talk of our times. This is the talk of our times on Block Talk Radio, the Wilder Network.
You know what? Donald Trump is calling for no debates moderators. Wow. He wants to give folks, he wants to give debates, but he doesn't want anybody there to be asking him questions. You know why? Because they might catch him in a lie. That's why. He doesn't want any debate moderators. As the pressure mounts to fact check him. Just like I said, he doesn't want moderators because they might ask something that's true that could embarrass him and find out that he's actually lying about something. This guy is a piece of work. And the thing about it, folks, he just might win. Donald Trump could wind up being the president of the United States. There's no doubt about it. And if he does, we just got to deal with it. You know, we got to deal with it. And he may not be that bad of a guy. We may all just be misunderstanding him or misinterpreting him or whatever, but you know, this could happen. I'm not saying I'm a Donald Trump supporter. I'm just saying that he could wind up with Clinton and her problems. You know, this guy could wind up and end up in the White House in November, which is what, a month, 2 months from now. And he's catching up with Clinton in the polls. In some states, he's leading her, you know, and now this happens where she collapsed, her health is an issue. It's not something he made up or lied about. This is real. Her health, pneumonia, is something you do not play with. And so he can win this thing, and he doesn't want, this would be historical if something like this would happen. This would be historical if something like this would happen. He doesn't want you to ask him questions because he doesn't want to be caught in a lie. Donald Trump is not, he's not fit to be president. A lot of us know that, you know, but he's an amusing guy, and he's up in the polls. He has shaken up his campaign, and it worked because he's up in the polls. Hillary Clinton is slipping. The Democrats are, it looks as if they may not win the Senate. You can forget about the House of Representatives. The Dems just don't have it. They just do not have it. And the Republicans, they do. They're the bad guys, but they have it. And the Democrats, they're crying in their soup. That's all they do is cry in their soup. And the Republicans just, you know, run away with it. But getting back to Donald Trump calling for no debate moderators, it's crazy. There's never been a presidential debate where someone didn't ask questions of the candidates. He wants to change. He wants to change the way things have always been done in this country and elsewhere, because he's Donald Trump. I'm Donald Trump, you know, and, you know, he said one day that that people just kiss his ass left and right. He said every time he calls, they just kiss his ass. He doesn't care who they are, politicians, CEOs, other rich, they just call and they just kiss his ass. And I believe him. I totally believe him. I do believe a lot of people kiss Donald's ass. You know, and he got a lot of African Americans out there kissing his ass, going on these television shows, these news shows, and lying through their teeth about Donald Trump. And a lot of them are getting caught at it. But hey, Donald Trump is still high in the polls, and he could be the next president of the United States. So don't count him out, especially with Clinton's latest troubles. I mean, her emails have probably affected her health, because they're constantly bashing her on her emails all the time, every day. And then she's on the road. She's been out there campaigning for maybe what, almost 2 years for president. She needs rest. And I'm going to say this: she's a woman. I mean, there's a different makeup in the body structure from a man to a woman. So she's a woman, and you know, this is monumental. This is monumental. And this is probably going to take some of her polls down. And like I said at the beginning of the show, Donald, Bernie Sanders, the Democratic, the DNC may be at this moment, as I'm speaking, figuring out if anything else goes wrong with Hillary Clinton, that they may think about replacing her. I think she came out today or a few hours later after she had stumbled and fainted to wave at the cameras and say, I'm fine, I'm okay. But that's not it. The fact is that she was out there knowing she was sick. She could have died. She was out there knowing she was sick. She knew she was sick because the doctor told her that previous Friday. She went out there anyway, and she did not, you know, inform the public of that, tell anybody of that. Now, that, as I've said, brings into question her truthfulness. Once again, it brings in her transparency issue, you know. And now she's all smiles and waving and all of that kind of thing, even though she could still come out of this on top. because now she is getting national attention. Donald Trump got it when he went to Mexico and made a fool of himself. You know, I mean, it was all over the place. And because of that, I think Donald Trump rose in the polls, regardless of the outcome of the trip, is the fact that he was all over the newspaper, all over the internet, all over the television and Sunday shows. He was everywhere. And I think that actually gave him a rise in the polls. And now Clinton, with this health scare, she's all over every place. People are talking about her. She's up there in lights. So her poll numbers could go up, because most Americans are forgiving people. I mean, they understand it when you get sick, when you're not feeling well. They're not going to turn on you or not support you anymore because you fell sick. You know, because we all get sick. Everybody gets sick. We got people going to work every day at their jobs, no matter what it is. They're sick. I used to go to work sick. We all have gone to work sick. Hillary Clinton did the same. She was sick, but she was at work campaigning. It just caught up with her, you know. So we're not going to, I'm not saying do not support Hillary Clinton because she got sick. I'm just saying Hillary Clinton should have let everybody knew that she had gone to the doctor and he had told her that she had pneumonia, and she probably should not have been at that 9/11 celebration. But no. We are people. We get sick. And Hillary's been out here almost 2 years on the campaign trail, you know. And so you really can't blame her for that. But you can blame her for being less transparent, that she didn't let us know about this. She didn't let people know about this. She didn't want Donald Trump to know about it. She didn't want Donald Trump to know that she was sick, because he did bring up her health, the health issue a few weeks ago. But that was, you know, I don't think she was as sick as she is now or was a few weeks ago. She might have been feeling great, you know, but still it brings in a trust factor in Hillary Clinton. But she could still wind up being president. There's no doubt about it. You know, her poll numbers may go up because of this, because she's human. She's human, right? She's a woman. She's human, okay? And it was good for Donald Trump not to pounce on this. It was great. He said something like, you know, I wish her well, and I get no gratification or satisfaction out of this. These are his words, or close to his words. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Okay, let's see what we got here. Simone Biles. She's all over the place. I am a fan. She's a gymnast. I think she won 4 gold medals and 1 bronze or something like that. She is something. Let's see if we can. Does she have anything she needs to say? Okay, hold on.
All right. You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, the talk of our times. This is the talk of our times on Block Talk Radio, the Wilder Network.
Thank you. I am Samantha Bee. Welcome to Full Frontal. Listen, can we set politics aside for a second and appreciate that history was made last week?
I accept your nomination for President of the United States.
We have waited our whole lives to hear a woman say those words, and then immediately get criticized for the voice she said them in. Gosh, you boys sure hate your mothers, don't you? Lucky for Democrats, their big shindig followed the 4-day blooper reel that was the Republican convention. A poorly attended rage-a-thon featuring a parade of hemorrhoidal has-beens trying to literally scare up votes by making America shit its pants.
Every American should be terrified.
I half expected to close my mirror in the Cleveland Holiday Inn and see Newt Gingrich with a knife. TerrorCon 16 set the bar so low for the Democrats, we couldn't wait to see how they'd trip over it. After all, this is the party that brought us the 2004 classic, Fucked Up Balloon Drop.
No balloons, we need more balloons. All balloons should be going. Come on, guys, let's move it. Jesus, all balloons, right? nothing's falling. What the fuck are you guys doing up there?
What a catastrophe. The balloons were a mess, too. So, okay, Democrats, go on now. Your turn to embarrass the nation.
That is the story of this country, the story of generations of people who felt the lash of bondage, the shame of servitude, the sting of segregation, but who kept on striving and hoping and doing what needed to be done so that today I wake up every morning in a house that was built by slaves. And I watch my daughters, two beautiful, intelligent black young women, playing with their dogs on the White House lawn.
I'm not crying. I've just got tears coming out of my wherever. And sure, America's racists lost their shit, forcing multiple news sites to fact check the idea that slavery happened. It did. And when this election is over, we need to have a serious talk about education in this country. While the superdelegates scrambled to switch their votes to Michelle Obama, the DNC proceeded to put on a USA love fest that left us feeling like we just got a national blowjob from the American flag.
Don't let anyone ever tell you that this country isn't great.
Our best days are ahead of us.
Americans have never, ever, ever, ever let their country down. Never. Never.
All pledging allegiance under the same proud flag.
The greatest country on this planet.
America, we will rise.
God bless America.
America.
America. America.
I'm not crying. I just have America in my eye. The convention was an unexpected triumph of positive messaging and flawless showmanship. Turns out, the Democrats had this in them all along, and all it took for them to get their shit together was the looming certainty of Armageddon. Bastards! The party of dreamers and immigrants wanted everyone to know they welcome refugees. In particular, refugees from the Republican Party, some of whom are feeling as homeless right now as the working poor they've been shafting for decades.
What we heard in Cleveland last week wasn't particularly Republican. See, my grandparents, they came from the heartland, small town folk. Some were Democrats, but a lot of them, maybe even most of them, were Republicans. Party of Lincoln. That's what happens when you're the kind of citizen Teddy Roosevelt once described. Ronald Reagan called America a shining city on a hill.
Come on, Republicans, who are you going to listen to? Agent Orange or Black Reagan? The entire week was an implicit middle finger to Trump's dystopian view of America, mixed in with some first-class trolling of a certain Law and Order cop humper.
I served as an NYPD officer.
I spent 27 years on the Orlando Police Force.
When I was Philadelphia Police Commissioner.
As a police officer.
Police officers are good people, doing a good job.
An attack on a police officer anywhere is an attack on our entire society.
Dad, as all of you now know, liked Police Academy. My mom and I loved Pride and Prejudice.
Damn, Chelsea just plagiarized both the Republican convention themes. But in 4 days of powerful rebukes to Trumpism, the most devastating came from the father of Captain Humayun Khan, who sacrificed his life while saving his fellow soldiers in Iraq.
You have sacrificed nothing, Donald Trump. You're asking Americans to trust you with their future. Let me ask you, have you even read the United States Constitution? I will gladly lend you my copy.
He means it. He even picked out a copy of the Constitution small enough for Trump to fit in his hand. Now, naturally, America's burst appendix couldn't let that one slide.
If you look at his wife, she was standing there. She had nothing to say. She probably, maybe she wasn't allowed to have anything to say, you tell me.
She was too choked up from seeing her son's picture. Why are you allowed to have anything to say? Now, unlike the bleak, militaristic scowling displayed on stage at the end of the Republican convention, this one ended with a joyful, affectionate celebration, particularly for Bill Clinton, who timed it perfectly so the shrooms were just kicking in. Balloons far out. So there she is, the official nominee, ready to face her greatest challenger, herself.
The truth is, through all these years of public service, the service part has always come easier to me than the public part.
Well, fortunately, the job of president doesn't have any public parts, so you'll be fine. Look, can we get an Obama out here to do the rousing oratory? Sasha, Bo, any of them?
There has never been a man or a woman, not me, not Bill, nobody, more qualified than Hillary Clinton to serve as president of the United States of America.
He's right. I wasn't ready. Now, the president's endorsement was echoed by the vice president, the former president, the TV president, senators, governors, athletes, preachers, the working poor, the self-made billionaire, Republicans, and, oh, just for good measure, half the fucking Pentagon standing on stage saying, vote for Hillary if you want to live. That is how good you have to be if you're a woman running for president. And she still might lose to this, the least qualified candidate ever to lurch into the public spotlight and shit on Gold Star moms while cradling Putin's sweaty sack. Let's hope Hillary doesn't get lipstick on her teeth between now and November, or it's all over. We'll be right back.
All right, that was Samantha Bee on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Let me get back to bring Bernie Sanders back. There's a movement out there bringing Bernie Sanders back because totally, Hillary Clinton is battling pneumonia. There is no doubt about it. I mean, she's going to be off the campaign trail for a while. Doctor's orders, there's no doubt about it. She's got to get back to her norm, but that's no reason to disband, to abandon her. But still, in all this thing, her sickness, if it gets worse, we're gonna have to bring Bernie Sanders back or try, because I'm an independent just like Bernie Sanders. Okay, I'm gonna say something. H.A. Goodman, a writer, he said, during my writing of this election, I warned Democrats and voters afraid of Donald Trump that Bernie Sanders was the only way to defeat GOP nominee. I think a lot of us knew that, so he can't take sole responsibility of that. My advocacy for Bernie in over 200 articles, The Hill, The Salon, and The Huffington Post, has fueled in large part by my admiration for his honesty and message. I totally agree. I do think Bernie was more honest than Hillary Clinton, totally more honest than Donald Trump. There's no doubt about it. As a result of being an inspiration to millions, polls showed Vermont senator constantly beating Trump 10 points. And right now, Hillary is lucky if she get over 3 points. Okay, there's no doubt in my mind that Bernie Sanders would have beaten the hell out of Trump. And Trump knows it. He's not a dummy, maybe. Okay, in contrast, Hillary Clinton was only up by 2.7 points over Trump the other day. Furthermore, the time is no longer on Clinton's side. She'll need to actively campaign to win. Yet just canceled a trip to California. Right, she just if I can say it, my tongue is in my throat, folks. She just canceled a trip to California, the largest state in the United States, and she canceled a trip because of her sickness. She's sick. She can't make it. Now, by her not being able to do that, I don't know if that's going to cause her to lose more ground in the national polling. I don't know, but I'm hoping not. But there's no doubt about it. If this was Bernie Sanders, this would not be happening because he would be so far ahead of Trump. It would be so funny. It would be funny. Okay. Trump presidency was viewed as an impossibility, but now it's not. Now both candidates are battling for swing states and the national polls show a virtual tie. How did this become possible? Yeah, you know, this is correct. How did Trump become tied in the national polls. You know, at one point she was up 12%. Now she's tied with Trump. Trump is not supposed to be passing up Hillary, but he is. This is why I said at the beginning of this show, it's their possibility that this guy could win. And I'm at this point, you know, I got to say, hey, wow. Hello, President Donald Trump. You know, no matter how much it might hurt me or how I might disagree with it, but Hillary is faulting. And we know that Bernie Sanders would have never, ever faulted like this. He'd have been in he'd have been in Donald Trump's ass. Because Hillary is, I'm going to say this, folks, Hillary, I don't think is much of a fighter, okay? She's like Obama. She's not much of a fighter. Donald Trump is a vicious fighter. Hillary Clinton is not much of a fighter. She's not. And Bernie is a fighter. Bernie fights his ass off. Bernie should have won. Bernie should be in the place that Hillary Clinton is in running for president, not in the polling. Because he's been far ahead of Bernie. This would have been a revolution if Bernie had won this thing, gotten this thing. But I think he was cheated out of it. The reason why we don't have Bernie right now is because he was cheated out of the election by the DMC, who was then ran by Debbie Wasserman Schultz. He was cheated out of it. There's no doubt about it. After five DNC officials were forced to resign for cheating Bernie Sanders. There's no doubt about it. They cheated. That's why he's not in the race. And Vermont senator endorsed Clinton, and he endorsed Clinton. The oxygen was removed from a growing political revolution. I just said that. This would have been a political revolution. Bernie would have just excoriated Donald Trump. But now we got Clinton, and we are going to lose. I don't want to speak too soon, but that's the way it looks now. If it changes, I'll be back on the air and say, hey, wow, we're going to take our country back. Hillary Clinton became a political Ms. Pac-Man, devouring Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. The establishment claimed that unity was needed in order to defeat a dangerous Donald Trump. But after months of being labeled Bernie bros and worse, many progressives moved to Jill Stein. If Bernie doesn't return, I'll be voting for Dr. Jill Stein in 2016. I don't know her. I disagree with him right here. I think, you know, you can always write in Bernie Sanders. You know, if you get to the polls and Hillary is just not what you want, or she's too, you know, she's going to be a loser, you can always write in Donald Trump. I mean, bah. You can always write in his name, Bernie Sanders' name. You don't have to vote for Jill Stein because she has a warrant out on her for her arrest for vandalism or graffiti or something, you know. So I don't, huh? Graffiti? All right. Okay. All right. But I don't want anyone to suffer the health issues and hope for a speedy recovery. We all do. The uproar throughout the country regarding this topic, on the other hand, is a serious concern for Democrats. It is. It is. Hillary is a serious concern for Democrats. She should have, once again, this should have been Bernie Sanders. There's no doubt about it. If Clinton ever needed to leave the race, only one person would be able to defeat Trump. Democrats need Bernie Sanders now more than ever. It's time for anyone who truly fears the dangers of a Trump presidency to admit the DNC decision to undermine Sanders was a colossal mistake. It's also time for the people to realize that Clinton's current polling lead won't hold up with further controversy. It will not. And she's leading, but she's leading by small margins. If it was Bernie Sanders, he would be out, way out there beyond Donald Trump. Way out there. Oh, man, this is something, you know. Right. It should have been Bernie Sanders. There's no doubt about that. 347-857-1762. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We have just about 7 o'clock straight up Chicago time, 7 o'clock p.m. It's getting dark. The summer is coming to an end. I was just talking to one of my neighbors, and we were saying that we are sad to see summer go. But as I've stated in other shows, this has been one of the best summers I think I've ever been a part of in the city of Chicago. And I'm up there in age, folks, and I want to say this is one of the best. This is why I said at the beginning of the show, I think it's going to be a mild winter because the summer has been so great and so cooperating. And it has. And one of the reasons I can tell that summer is leaving is because the days are starting to get a hell of a lot shorter. And that's a bummer. That's a total bummer. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We were off for a few days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, but we're back and we are in the groove, or either down in the groove or ain't that a groove. We are in the groove and it is fun. It is great. I'm proud to be back. Let's hope we can stay on the radio for a while. All righty. We got this.
You're watching The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ MV Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building.
That's right.
Dr. Umar Johnson.
Peace my and brother. Love. Peace. Peace and love, family. Bro? All is well. Glad to be back.
Now, let's get right to it, man. In light of everything that's going on, what are the solutions? We've discussed the problem so much. What are the solutions?
All right. Before I state the solution, I would have to challenge you on that. Because although we talk about the problems a lot of people don't understand how the problem operates.
Gotcha.
Let me give you an example. Take miseducation.
Okay.
People know the children aren't learning. They know black boys are not graduating. They know special ed is an issue. They know ADHD is a problem. But they don't know how this operates.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand how the child goes from the classroom into the special education system.
Okay.
So they have to be taught how it operates. You follow? So we understand that police genocide is a problem in the black community. We understand that structural inequality, disproportionality, i.e. racism, is a problem. But do we understand how racism operates? So I think that once you understand how the problem operates and manifests itself, you're now in a position to solve it.
Mm.
Someone comes to me for therapy. Before I do any therapy, what I do, a clinical history.
Mm.
Is there depression in your family? Have you been depressed before? Have you ever contemplated suicide? So I have to understand your background and how you've been living your life in order to solve your current everyday problems. So now, coming to the present, what we're seeing going on around the country. Let's be honest. Africans were brought to America to serve. We're no longer necessary for the American economic order to operate. They don't need us to function. That explains the purging. That explains the ethnic cleansing.
Even with all these Negroes making money?
Well, remember now, when you look at the black folks who are rich, they are a small percentage of the general body politic of the community. You understand? 85% of black folks are struggling. Half of our children grow up in poverty. Most of our single-parent black mothers are poor, even with a burgeoning rate of black women earning their college degrees.
Mm.
So simply put, black America is suffering despite the television projection of success. Yes, we are more educated than ever before. We have the bachelor's, we have the master's, we have the doctorates. But that education has not taken place alongside an increase in wealth acquisition. We're smarter, but we still don't own anything.
Mm. Well, we know we're poor. We know some of us are not well educated. We know some of us have a lot of problems due to where we're growing up in our environment.
Yes.
But besides all of that,
mm-hmm.
we got a bigger problem with racism. It's the way that other people look at us.
I agree.
You know what I mean? But I'm not saying it's right, but the way we look at ourselves is bad, too.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because if I'm walking down the street and I see some brothers with some hoods on, it makes me think twice.
Right.
So if it makes me think twice, I know it's going to make somebody else think twice, but it doesn't give us the doesn't give them the right to put a.
But that's
a lot
based
of
off your experiences, though.
But like, it is based like off you know, yeah.
It's like, also based off conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
The conditioning is critical. Media is critical,
right,
to the social agenda of any country. You understand? You take Adolf Hitler. Before he did what he did in Germany, he conducted a media campaign that sought to destroy the image of a European Jew in the German mind before the physical Holocaust began. Mm-hmm. Same thing in America. Before you begin taking the black life, you must kill the image of the black life.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at gangster rap, which plays a hand in it,
mm-hmm.
okay, when you look at mm-hmm. the way in which we're portrayed in movies,
mm-hmm.
when you look at the way in which we're portrayed on the radio, popular media, magazines, it is in a very negative way, as if to say these people, the world would be better off without these people.
That's why so they once leave people criminal records when
exactly,
they kill them.
Exactly, exactly. Too. In other words, it's not so bad that he died because he went to jail anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to kill the image before you kill the person. Why? Because people will take up for people who are unjustly treated. But if you can convince the world that we would be better off without these people by killing their image, then when the physical carnage begins, no one will care.
How do we change that, though? How do we change the way that America looks at African Americans, and how do we change the fact that these
you don't have to drive them out,
racist police officers to stop pulling out the gun? See, I think it's you have to penalize them.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, you know, it's kind of like a kid. You know, your kid does something bad, and you say, okay, it's okay. He's going to continue to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you bust his ass, next time he's thinking about doing it, he's going to be like, well, you know what? My pops is going to bust my ass. I feel like the police officers that kill African Americans, just kill people in general, they don't get penalized for it.
I agree with it. You're absolutely correct. For example, behavioral psychology, two basic laws is what? All behavior is a function
mm-hmm.
of the context in which it takes place. The American racial hierarchy, it's a function of the context. And then it's a function of the consequences.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You follow?
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, behavior never stands still. Whether it's you, whether it's a child, whether it's a country, whether it's the police. Behavior is always getting worse,
right,
or it's always getting better. So when Zimmerman wasn't punished for Trayvon,
right,
that automatically created a context
absolutely
for it to happen again.
Right.
Do you understand? Walter Scott, Tamir Rice, it creates a context.
Michael
so the
Ryan.
Next police officer yeah. says, well, wait a minute, I can be a little bit more trigger happy because the last five black men and women, Sandra Bland, who were murdered by police, were not held accountable. So when you do nothing about misbehavior,
mm-hmm.
then you're actually supporting its repeating.
Now,
itself.
What do protests do? Because people protest and they say,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I love the unity, and I love the unity of African American people. I wish we could be more unified when it's not just a brother dying. But I feel like sometimes the protest, what is it getting accomplished?
Okay.
You know? And the reason I ask that is because, you know, you protest, you shut down a highway, there's an ambulance that's trying to get somebody to a hospital, that person dies in the ambulance. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm stuck in traffic. I can't pick up my kid at 5 p.m. So what is the protest actually doing? Is it going to make the cop look at us any better? Like, what can we do besides, I think, the protest? I don't know if the protest really worked.
Right. Well, first of all, we got to keep in mind that the black person is normally dead before the ambulance shows up to get them in the first place.
True.
So let's be clear on that.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing, Envy. Protest is the first stage of any political economic struggle.
Right.
Protest is your marketing program to let the world know what I stand for, what's happening to me,
mm-hmm.
and what I want. Protest allows you to control the public narrative about your struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Without the protest, the world doesn't know why you're doing what you're doing.
That's
so
real.
Protest is important mm-hmm. because it is your way to put out your message.
Gotcha.
So you can't do nothing without it. The problem with black people is there's nothing after the protest.
Right.
Do you understand? The protest becomes the goal instead of the means to the end.
That's what I keep asking. What is the solution? What's the next action? Like we saw.
Well, let me tell you what has to happen now.
Okay.
Because now we're in a state of crisis for black America.
Okay.
Three things black America has failed to do, which is going to keep this carnage machine in place, this police genocide. Number one, we have failed to publicly criticize and hold accountable the executive branch of the United States government, i.e. President Barack Obama. Despite all the killings, despite all the murders, despite an unemployment rate and a dropout rate that is greater under a black president than it was under the two previous Republican presidents, black people have remained silent.
Mm.
Obama has ignored black folk. In fact, we are the only so-called minority population in the country for which he has done nothing nor has spoken significantly for our issues. Compare us to LGBT. They got three laws under Obama. Three. That is unprecedented. Mm-hmm. How many laws did black people get under Obama to protect us from police genocide or even to improve the schools or to reduce incarceration?
Wow.
Zero. Okay, they got a Supreme Court justice. Latinos got a Supreme Court justice. LGBT got a Supreme Court justice. President Obama had the opportunity to appoint the first African-American female Supreme Court justice, and he chose not to act. It's not all his fault, though. We have created a context where the president can ignore black people and get away with it because we told the entire world when he was elected that all he had to do was just be black and we were fine. Remember?
Yeah, we didn't.
He doesn't have to do anything but be black. That is the worst thing you can say as a marginalized oppressed group in such a racist country as this, as to tell the world that the president, the executive branch of the United States government, does not have to be accountable for you.
That's for any head of state, though. Any head of state, yes, we elect, we need to push and make sure things happen.
But Obama is the first president out of 44, the first one from George Washington up, that has not had to deal with any sort of public criticism from black people. Mm-hmm. And if he leaves office without any, here's the problem. If we let Obama leave office without any condemnation from the black community, by virtue, you cannot hold Hillary or Trump accountable for what they do not do for black people, because you have now created a precedent where a president can come in for 8 years, ignore you, even with police genocide, and not receive any criticism.
Why do people make excuses? You know, and I was always mad. I was upset about this because I felt like he was our president, you know, and I felt like when certain things happen, I felt like he should be on the front lines because he's dealt and seen, and I'm sure he's been pulled over before. I'm sure he's been racially profiled before. So it kind of bothers me when I see a lot of these individuals get shot and killed, and you don't really hear much from them.
Exactly.
Even to the thing with, you know, when he flew back to go to the funerals and speak to the officers in Dallas, I thought that was great. Mm-hmm. But then I also thought, well, what about Baton Rouge?
Exactly.
What about Minnesota?
Exactly.
What about Ferguson?
He's not going to do that because President Obama understands something that most blacks in America do not understand. The first business of America is racism. Let's be clear about something. Most white people in America, okay, are also suffering economically, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm white in a country based on white privilege, what is my claim to fame if I don't have a decent education, don't have a good job? For many white people in this country, their only claim to fame is the fact that I can say I exercise privilege vis-a-vis black people. Obama understands that. So America is held together by the fact that the poor white man understands that he still exercises a privilege that the rich black man does not.
And that's what Donald Trump is reminding them. Donald Trump is reminding all the
white
people.
Oh, Donald Trump changed the game. And let me tell you why. The United States power structure underestimated the impact of an unapologetically honest fool over the American electorate. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, Trump is saying to white folks what white folks feel.
Poor white folks, too.
Yes, poor white folks. So you got a rich, wealthy white man appealing to poor white folks. You've never had that. But it's working because he is unapologetic. He's ignorant. He's a fool. But he's honest.
Mm-hmm.
And white folk can respect and identify with a white male who's willing to be honest. In other words,
you are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio.
Yeah, it seems for the first time Republicans have cared about a woman's health pertaining to Hillary Clinton, because they have always been trying to close and defund Planned Parenthood. That shows you that they actually didn't care about a woman's health. And even some of the conservative women were trying to or want to or will defund Planned Parenthood. And in some form, if they control Congress and the White House. But this is the first time Republicans have actually cared about a woman's health. Hillary's. We all do. We all care about her health. We all wanted to get better. And because pneumonia, like I said at the start of the show, the pneumonia is a serious illness. It's nothing to play with. Too many people have succumbed to pneumonia. And it's nothing to play with. It's nothing to play with at all. And okay, let's move on. We've talked about that, but we want to bring Bernie back if we can, if at all possible, you know. So, and I'm pretty sure they're working on that, because you never know what else is going to happen. to Clinton, but like I said before, she's human. She's human. She's been working her tail off for maybe almost 2 years nonstop. So you can't really blame her for feeling faint. You know, anybody, it could happen to you, anybody. You bust your ass, you know, you don't get enough sleep, you don't get enough relaxation. The emails are pounding her, like I said early on the show. So, you know, she's just human. And who knows? Maybe some positiveness might come out of this. But right now, as I mentioned, she's not losing to Trump, but Trump is gaining so far at the broadcast of this show. Trump is gaining. And there's no doubt about it, folks. If this was Bernie Sanders, Bernie would be way out in front. We'd have a revolution. Things would be just hunky-dory. I mean, you'd have young people wall to wall all over the place. It would be a little bit more exciting if Bernie was back in the race. This could happen. I'm pretty sure wherever he is, probably giving a speech or getting ready to give a speech, he knows that some people around him in his circle are saying they want you back in the race. They want you to run. Do not think Hillary Clinton is up to the task. They fear a Trump presidency. And I'm pretty sure he's probably mulling it back in the race. If he had a chance, I think he would. Bernie is just that type of guy. He's ambitious. He's bad. He's bold. He's a fighter. You know, unlike Hillary Clinton, I don't think she's much of a fighter. I think if we saw her as a fighter, she would be faking it. Just like she faked her illness. You know, she went to this 9/11 celebration knowing she was sick. She faked everybody out, had everybody think that she was well, and she wasn't. And this is what I think is going on here. She's faking being a fighter. You know, she's not a fighter. Bernie is a fighter, and he should get back into this thing. A lot of people disagree. A lot of people feel he ain't going to show. He won't come. But I have a feeling that if you asked him and if there was a real, real possibility of him getting back into this race and letting Hillary off the hook because she's sick and she's down in the polls, she will not win. I think he would come back, but it would have to be something devastating to make him want to come back and get into this race. It would have to be something devastating. And you never know with Hillary Clinton, it might. It might. And then again, you never know. Hillary might, a lot of Americans, you know, they understand being sick. They understand when you working so many hours a day, every day, not getting any rest, not getting any sleep. You know, no relaxation or anything. Media is all in your face. You know, with Hillary's problem, the emails probably affected her more than anything else. You know, because she's sick and tired of answering questions about these emails. But somewhere, the Republicans will not let this thing go. See, they don't have Bernie Sanders to kick around. They're kicking Hillary all around, the Republicans. They're kicking her everywhere there is a place to kick. You know, and this is, you know, playing on her nerves. This is playing on her nerves. So I'm all for bringing Bernie back. I think Bernie Sanders' supporters out here, they want him back too. Or, let's put it this way, folks. Or whether you like Donald Trump or not, and, you know, he doesn't seem like a bad guy. I'm going to tell you something. He doesn't seem like a bad guy. He just, I think what Donald Trump is doing, as he goes along and progress through this thing, he's getting better. He's learning a lot. His attitude is better. And he knows that's the reason why his poll numbers are going up and Hillary's are going down. So, you know, we just got to And another thing I understand is that Hillary, her sickness has propelled her into the spotlight. And I think that's what she needs. She needs the spotlight. Donald Trump had the spotlight when he went to Mexico. And one of the reasons why his poll numbers are climbing is because of that visit, even though that visit didn't garner a damn thing, But he was in the spotlight. He was, you know, the media spotlight. Now she's in the spotlight. Maybe not for anything she wanted to be in the spotlight for, but she's in the spotlight. And Americans are caring, they're understanding, they're giving people, and she may, her numbers may go up because of that. However, the Trump supporters are going to play it, you know, for whatever they can get out of it. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, WTTTY. It is totally dark in Chicago. I mean, summer's, it's leaving, and I feel pretty bad about that. but it's still hot and muggy outside, so, you know, you never know. All right, you've been listening to George Wilder Jr. on the George Wilder Jr. Show.
From the mighty and the mighty from the small.
All righty. I just got this thrown across my desk, folks. It said that the military, most of the people in the military are fat. The police officers are fat. You know, they're overweight. If you want to use a nicer word, obese, but this all means the same. I mean, you would think that these two branches of government would be in great shape because they have to move. You never know what's going to happen. But I do know in the city of Chicago, a lot of the officers, police officers, are totally, grossly out of shape. You know, if they have to, you should see some of these videos where some of these grossly unhealthy, good shape. And officers who are not in good shape chasing after a criminal, you know, and you never know if you're not in good shape and you're trying to chase after a criminal, you could have a heart attack. You know, there's no doubt about it. But a lot of the police officers, especially in Chicago with its crime, they should be in some sort of shape, some kind of shape in case you're going to need it. I mean, in the city of Chicago and some of these other towns where crime is escalating, you're going to need it because you're going to be foot chasing and dodging and ducking bullets and whatever. So you got to get yourself, you know, you got to get in shape. A lot of cops aren't in shape, especially the uniform cops. You know, you might have a few of these detectives going around and wearing tight shirts and muscle bulging and their, you know, their Glock on their side. But then you got too many of these police officers in blue uniforms that are totally out of shape. And I think this is not a criticism. You know, I'm not criticizing police officers or anything. I'm just saying that they're with the money that these people are making. I mean, I'm pretty sure they can probably afford a gym membership. You know, I mean, there's gyms all over the place. And you don't need to, you know, be in a gym working out all day, you know, 30 to an hour a day, you know, or on the weekends. But you have to get in shape, because if I was a police officer or a firefighter or in the military, I would know that I would have to be in great shape, you know, because you're going to need to run, jump, you know, and it can save your life one day. I'm not criticizing the police or anybody. I'm just saying, because every time I see, you know, people out here who weighs over 300 pounds, they're out here exercising. I give them a thumbs up because they're trying to do something about their weight. You know, they want to look better. They want to be better. They want to run, jump. They want to live. They want to be around for a long time. So, you know, that's, like I said, there's no criticism on the military. This is just a report that was thrown across my desk. They just whispered in my ear. I have 90 seconds left into the show, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. I totally enjoyed it. It was fun. I couldn't do this thing if it wasn't fun. We have around about 2 or 3 more minutes, I believe. Maybe less than 1 minute. I want to say something about Bruce Rauner in the state of Illinois. There was a protest downtown earlier protesting a raise in the minimum wage and protesting. 60 seconds. So we'll see how that goes. And I want to say thank you for tuning into the show. I hope you guys join me tomorrow. The show will be just as good, just as better. We are going to leave you now with, let me see, what can we leave them with? Because we're just about off the air. How about a little
all we say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
Hope you join me tomorrow, everybody. Bye-bye.